हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 93 वर्सेस 1 टू 26 In response to Brahma's prayers, the Lord dispatches Hiranyaksha only after satisfying his fighting spirit. The Lord effortlessly kills the demons after satisfying his desire to fight. Sri Maitreya said, After hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Verse 1. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to verse 1, expands on that love. Brahma's words were truthful since he had said that he had given a boon to the demon. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.18.22. His words were filled with love, Amritam, since he told the Lord to kill the demon before the twilight. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.18.24. This indicates that those words were relished by the Lord. The Lord smiled. Out of prema for me, one can lose all memory, since Brahma teaches me, the personification of time, to choose the correct time to kill the demon. End quote. The Lord accepted those words with a glance filled with love. By this, the Lord indicates, yes, what you say is true. Just as you instruct, I will kill the demon now. However, I will kill him in the evening today, since I will fully satisfy myself with fighting him. So Brahma is worried about the time because out of affection he's forgetting. Because we always have to remember, when you have the aspect of majesty, then you're going to have the point that you're not going to really forget that the Lord is the Lord. Right? But when you have the element of sweetness, then there's some chance of forgetting. Right? So here then we can see as Brahma's, his attraction to the Lord then has that element. He knows the position of the Lord, but that has that element of sweetness. Because the demigods, they're only selling kill the Lord, kill him quickly because they're really worried about themselves. But Brahma is saying that in connection with the Lord. So that would be a difference. So that's why it's with affection, the Lord responds with affection. Right? But otherwise, the demigods he takes care of because they're working on his behalf. So he's also going to take care of them nicely. But they're worried about what they can do for the, you know, about their, more about the service as opposed to the Lord himself. Right? So, being worried about the service is a position, but it's not as high as worrying about the Lord. Does that make sense? Because the service is for the Lord, but if you don't really worry about who you're doing the service for, then it's not as good. At least you're dutiful and that duty is connected to the Lord. And so then that's nice. But nicer is then that also that consideration of the person himself. Right? So that's Brahma's aspect. And then that affection for the Lord then has that sweetness that here is, as Krishna points out, here is time personified. And then Brahma's telling him about when's an auspicious time. Right? You know? Since Krishna is time, then naturally he's the one who's the source of all these muhurtas. So he knows which one's good, which one's not. And for him, all of them are good because they're all connected to him. But, you know, for the pastime, then you have certain ones that are good for certain things. So everything has its place. Everything has its time. So then, now he'll pick. But he'll say he'll do that in the evening. right? Before the demon becomes that powerful, but he wants to satisfy his fighting spirit. And at the same time, as you see from before, he also allows Hiranyaksha to use all of his techniques. So in that way, he's satisfied. He's done his best to try to fight with the Lord. And then all the techniques being finished, then naturally now, you know, everybody is happy. Yes.
It was only in one day.
Yes. Well, it seems that it started at noon, because Brahma mentioned about the Abhijit Muhurta. So that's when the sun is exactly straight up. So it seems to have started then, because he mentions it started at an auspicious time. So he's saying you should end it before it becomes inauspicious. Like that.
It means nighttime.
Yes. But even at the twilight, the demons become powerful. Like that. But he's going to leave it just to that last bit, because he starts to use his mystic powers. Like that. So then the point might come up is whether that means it's already started into the evening, so he's using, or it's just that his regular things aren't working. You know, it's just like, let's say, an incident where I think it's Hanuman. It may have been Angada. I don't remember if it's Hanuman or Angada. You know, they say he comes into the court of Ravana and mentions about, you know, they're saying this and that, and who are you, and why are you saying that? And he says, well, you know, so many nice words. Your kshatriya is less, so let's see something. He says, move my tail. So generally the first thing they do is come in with their left hand, because that's considered the weaker hand. You come to lift. And then when that doesn't work, then you use the right. You know, and then you do. So it's just there's that element that you start with your lesser things and then build up. Otherwise, you know, mosquito comes in the room and you get out, you know, your howitzer or something like that. You know, it's a little, you know, if whatever you do, the mosquito gets bigger and bigger, then you do that, you know. If it's the mosquito that ate Chicago, then you get out your howitzer and stuff like that. You know? So therefore, he'll save his mystic powers for later, because he's confident just with his club he'll defeat him. Right? Then that doesn't work. Then he turns to his mystic powers. Right? So whether it was because of the influence of the twilight that he was more powerful then with his mystic powers, or if it's simply just that he's run out of other techniques, so now he turns to the mystic powers. But in any case, he's going through everything. Quote, the Lord who had happened, who appeared from the nostril of Brahma, sprang and aimed his mace at the chin of his enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderfully. Right, so it's just all part of the path. The taste is there in everything. Even just when he loses the mace, it's amazing how it happens. So all these different tastes, you know, and then everybody at this point can go, you know. So, you know, all these different things. So to add to that, it becomes even better, right? Verses 2 and 3. An insight about the duel is furnished by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because Hiranyaksha was actually an associate of the Lord, and thus equal to the Lord, they had equal strength. Thus it was possible for the club to fall from the hand of the Lord. Without equal strength, there would be no pleasure in fighting. Because that's the whole thing, is if someone's weaker than you, then for a relationship it's fun. But actually for fighting, you want someone who's equal. You know? So you find that those who are junior and those who are senior in friendship, generally it's not necessarily so much wrestling. Or if there is, generally the senior is allowing the junior, you know, he doesn't do so many things, so it appears that it's equal, or if not even that the junior is in the superior position. But, which is nice for the relationship, but as far as actual fighting goes, it won't be so nice. But those friends who are exactly equal, then they will have the best fun at fighting. because then it's evenly matched. Each one could defeat the other. And so then that's where the greatest taste is. Thus, this action increased the enthusiasm of the Lord to fight. It is thus an ornament of the Lord, not a fault, since the Lord, filled with love for his devotee, many times accepts defeat at the hands of his devotee. So then here's an element where he's defeated in this one thing. So then, okay, so as equals, then he wins one thing, he wins another thing, and it goes back and forth. Like that. Even though the demon had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. Because you expect that someone's going to take advantage, right? And when they don't, that makes you more upset because then they're behaving nicely. So you get more upset because if they don't behave nicely, then it continues your mood that, of their behavior. But when they behave nicely, you become more upset because then you expect the one mood and you don't have that. So then, Footnote 13. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains why following the rules of combat enraged the Lord. The Lord said, "Because you know that I am in trouble by making my club fall by the strength of your arms, you display your sense of dharma and do not strike me. See, in a moment's time, I will take the club along with your life." Right? So now that gives the opportunity. You pick up the club and then you can start again. So then comes up more. Okay, we'll fight. As the Lord's mace fell to the ground, and a cry of alarm arose from the witnessing crowd of gods and rishis, the personality of Godhead acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness, and therefore invoked his Sudarshan disc. As the disc began to revolve in the Lord's hands, and the Lord contended at close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants, who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a vile son of Diti, there issued from every direction strange expressions uttered by those who are witnessing from airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you. Pray dispatch him. Play no more with him." Because they know he's the most powerful, but they don't really have the full understanding. Like that. Because it's just a matter of the Lord's revelation, yes.
Maybe it's from this fastness that for the Lord, it's not about Prayojana, it's Abhideya was interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's why Govindaji is the main deity. Because you need to act, you have to have a goal. But it's the action that's actually nice. Right? So it's not actually the goal. Right? But for the devotee, it's about pleasing the Lord. Therefore, that Prayojana is there. So you use the activity. So that way both the devotee and the Lord is pleased. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole element of the masculine and feminine interaction. So it works very nice. Say the man is very enthusiastic to acquire the things. It's not about getting them. It's the process of getting them. And for the woman, then it's actually getting them. So it all works out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I thought it's reversed, but somehow.
No. The man's goal-oriented because then there's something to do. And the woman does something because it gets a result. If you could get the result without working, hey. Does that make sense? So for the masculine, it's about the technique. For the woman, it's about the result. Because the result is where that particular taste is. But they're all tastes, just like, how you say, the Sandini is a taste, Samvit's a taste, and Vladini's a taste, right? So when we're talking about this, technically we're talking within Vladini, then the Samvit Vladini is the masculine aspect, and the Samvit Vladini, right? But the Vladini, that's the feminine aspect. That's why Krishna, to taste that, has to come as his own devotee. Does that make sense? Because that's why it said the devotee actually gets more pleasure from the interaction than the Lord. Right? So that's because they're in the feminine position. He's in the masculine. Like that. Right? Because the endeavor is made towards the masculine endeavors made towards the feminine. Right. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes you can see roles, yes, will reverse, but only for a temporary time. Because it's only because this is so nice, then the feminine nature will reverse the role, just to show what it is that the masculine endeavor was doing that pleased, that she'll do the same thing. But it'll only be for a short time. Because it's not the natural position. Does that make sense? So then you always have these things. Does that make some sense?
Yes.
Okay. It worked? When the demon saw the personality of Godhead, who had eyes just like lotus petals, standing in position before him, armed with his Sudarshan discus, his senses were overpowered by indignation. He began to hiss like a serpent, and he bit his lip in great resentment. The demon, who had fearful tusks, stared at the personality of Godhead, as though to burn him. Springing into the air, he aimed his mace at the Lord, exclaiming at the same time, "You are slain." O saintly Vidura, while his enemy looked on, the Lord in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings, playfully knocked down the mace with his left foot. Right. So again, here it's just because up to here is he does all these things, but that's just for the fun. And then now he just with his left foot he knocks it down. Even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. The Lord then said, "Take up your weapon and try again, eager as you are to conquer me." Right? So now it's been reversed, right?
Yes.
He knocked his weapon, and then now he says, so then now they'll be on, again, that mood will be on equal terms and the equal amount of anger, right? Challenging in these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying towards him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of birds, would seize a serpent. His valor thus frustrated, the great demon felt humiliated or was put out of countenance. He was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered by the personality of Godhead. Right, because now it's like, it's not even just... Before he knocked it down, so okay, then you just pick it up. But now he's caught it, now he's handing it back to him. That's even more insulting, right? So now he's reluctant. So now he'll do something else. He'll take up other weaponry and that. He now took a trident, which was rapacious as a flaming fire, and hurled it against the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Even as one would use penance for a malevolent purpose against the holy Brahmana. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, the flying trident showed brightly in the sky. The personality of Godhead, however, tore it to pieces with this discus Sudarshana, which had a sharp-edged rim, even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. The demon was enraged when his trident was cut to pieces by the discus of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the Personality of Godhead. He therefore advanced towards the Lord, and, roaring aloud, struck his hard fists against the Lord's broad chest, which bore the mark of Srivatsa. Then he went out of sight. So now he's gotten frustrated because his weapons were, so he just came out and started beating on the Lord, and then disappeared. Right? Hit in this manner by the demon, O Vidura, the Lord, who had appeared as the first boar, did not feel the least quaking in any part of his body, any more than an elephant would when struck with a wreath of flowers. Right? Go up to the elephant with your wreath of flowers. All right, elephant, this is it. Yeah. Not going to do much. 4 through 16. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 16 describes the mood of the Lord relishing the fighting. As previously explained, the demon was originally a servitor of the Lord in Vaikuntha, but somehow or other he fell as a demon, right? Because that's not the important point here. So when you say somehow or other, means there are technical things, but it doesn't really have any relevance for the particular topic. Right? So, but somehow we think, no, that's very important. But wherever Brahma says somehow or another, like the living entity becomes envious of Krishna, that's just somehow or other. It doesn't have an importance on how it's happening. It's happened. So the point is how to deal with it. You know, it's just like, let's say, somebody has dropped a glass in the kitchen, and it's all over the floor. Now, what has to be done is clean it up, because it's a dangerous position. But instead, we're saying, where was the glass? How was it knocked over? What force is used? You know, which finger, you know, like that? Which one slipped? Which one was wet? You know, like that. You know, it's like, how high was he holding it before it dropped? Was it just off the counter? Did he have it to his mouth? You know, like that. So it's kind of like, what has that got to do with this? No, it has everything to do. It has nothing to do with it. You know, so that's the whole. So therefore, somehow or other, because it's not really important for the moment, but. You know, due to our quote-unquote curiosity, we always have to know everything. Yes?
I think also it's because of insecurity that it won't happen again.
Yeah, no, that could be there. But first, clean it up, then worry about it. So that's what Prabhupada says. You know, go back to Godhead, then you can worry about how you got here.
You know, then it's really not important.
Yeah, then who cares? You know, it's like when you're on the boat, you know, in the cabin, you know, nice and warm and everything, then you worry about how you're out in the middle of the ocean. Right? You know, but if you're out in the ocean, they throw you a rope, and no, but how did I get here? Explain that first. It's kind of like you'd say, that's you know, stupid. But we're sitting there, oh, no, this is very important. You know, but like you say, yeah, there's the element of security, but you're being offered security, right?
Still insecure.
Yeah, but still we're insecure. Because everything in the material world is temporary, but this security is eternal, so we don't have to worry that it's not going to work. This one's good.
Mark?
Yes?
So Prabhupada also used the crow and tall fruit logic to explain the same point.
Okay.
A crow lands on a branch and then the tall fruit
fell.
The two pundits were arguing, did the fruit fall before the crow landed, or did the crow land and make it fall, or did they happen simultaneously? All just useless.
Yeah, or did the tall fruit by its mystic potency attract the crow at the same time? Because it was falling, then the crow came and sat on the branch. You know.
Prabhupada's answer to Mother Teresa.
Oh, okay. His fight with the Supreme Lord was meant for his liberation. The Lord enjoyed the striking on his transcendental body, just like a fully grown-up father fighting with his child. Sometimes a father takes pleasure in having a mock fight with a small child. And similarly, the Lord felt Hiranyaksha striking on his body to be like flowers offered for worship. In other words, the Lord desired to fight in order to enjoy his transcendental bliss. Therefore, he enjoyed the attack. The demon, however, employed many conjuring tricks against the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of Yoga Maya. So that's also the thing. It's just like Brahma's mentioning the time, though he's time for personified. He's the Lord of Yoga Maya, and then this demon is using, you know, tricks of Maya on him, like that. At the sight of this, the people were filled with alarm and thought that the dissolution of the universe was near. Fierce winds began to blow from all directions, spreading darkness occasioned by dust and hailstorms. Stones came in volleys from every corner, as if thrown by machine guns. But that's in the Sanskrit. So the concept of machine guns has always been there. It's just that it was only used by demons. It wasn't. The others would use arrows with mantras, or a blade of grass with a mantra. You know, it's like, you know, rather than having to walk around and carry, you know, your sword, your bows and arrows, you know, grass grows everywhere. So all you need is a blade of grass. You know. Like that. The luminaries in outer space disappeared due to the skies being overcast with masses of clouds, which were accompanied by lightning and thunder. The sky rained pus, hair, blood, stool, urine, and bones. Footnote 14. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, from this description is understood that the Lord, absorbed in the pleasure of fighting, went beyond the auspicious time indicated by Brahma. Right, so then this is when the twilight comes, then they can... So here it appears that they can only use their mystic potencies if that time comes. Like that. O sinless Vidura, mountains discharge weapons of various kinds, and naked demonesses armed with tridents appeared with their hair hanging loose. Cruel and savage slogans were uttered by hosts of ruffian yakshas and rakshasas, who all either marched on foot or rode on horses, elephants, or chariots. The Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifice, yeah. So all this is going, and it's just an illusion, it's not actually there. But the thing is because of illusion, it looks so real, one will become so distracted by it or disturbed by it that you can't properly fight anymore. So that's the demons concept. But so we see these very powerful warriors, when this happens, then they don't get disturbed. They just figure out where the source is and then shoot at that. You know, Arjuna would do that. Or here, just the Lord is he just takes the Sudarshan and just dispels it. Because Sudarshan is time. Right? And then it also is empowered with that, how you say it? It's as part of the internal potency, so then with that you can adjust the how his energy functions can be then accomplished. So, yes? No? Yeah.
The Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifices, now discharged his beloved Sudarshana, which was capable of dispersing the magical forces displayed by the demon. At that very moment, a shudder suddenly ran through the heart of Diti, the mother of Hiranyaksha. She recalled the words of her husband, Kasyapa, and blood flowed from her breasts. 1723. Diti had a premonition of her son's death, as described by Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 23. At Hiranyaksha's last moment, his mother, Diti, remembered what her husband had said. Although her sons would be demons, they would have the advantage of being killed by the personality of Godhead himself. She remembered this incident by the grace of the Lord, and her breast flowed blood instead of milk. In many instances, we find that when a mother is moved by affection for her sons, milk flows from her breasts. In the case of the demon's mother, the blood could not transform into milk, but it flowed down her breast as it was. Blood transforms into milk. To drink milk is auspicious, but to drink blood is inauspicious, although they are one and the same thing. This formula is applicable in the case of cow's milk also. Right, so because because of that affection in a natural state, then there's the auspiciousness, so there's milk. Right? But here, because the situation is inauspicious, therefore that affection then flows in that inauspicious form. Does that make sense? So... Yes, yeah, so then because now we can understand, it's come to the point where the Lord, the fighting, he's satisfied with the fighting, so now he's going to kill the Lord. So she never felt this before that, even though they were fighting the whole time. But now the Lord's made his determination, so now she is understanding this.
Can I?
Yes.
Do we have other example of a person like Giti where blood was coming?
Other... Not that I know of. Not that where it should be milk.
Yes.
Paisachas, it is blood.
Yes.
They don't bother with changing it to milk. Right? But
it is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, well, even just milk flowing from the breast is extraordinary. But so then this is even like that. It's the same intensity of affection, but instead of it being... You know, in happiness, it's in anxiety. You know. Because everything works by the life airs, and the life airs are moved by the condition of the mind. Right? So then when when the emotion mixes with the life air, then you get these physical symptoms. So it just means that the mood is very, very great. You know, just like in you have the Anubhavas, that will have an effect on the body, but they're from the mind. But then the sattvika bhavas means that the life airs are involved also. So you have more extreme physical reactions. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, we can understand he's very affectionate to the son. Right, and then Prabhupada's pointing out the thing of the cow's milk. So drinking the cow's milk, then that is auspicious. Drinking the cow's blood, that's inauspicious. Right, so since the principle is about the blood, therefore, then you take the blood in its auspicious form, which is milk. Right? So that's the natural state. Quote, when the demon saw his magic forces dispelled, he once again came into the presence of the personality of Godhead, Keshava, and full of rage tried to embrace him within his arms to crush him. But to his great amazement, he found the Lord standing outside the circle of his arms. 24. The demoniac mentality of calculating the Lord's limits is expressed by Srila Prabhupada in purport to verse 24. The demon's attempt to measure the Supreme Personality of Godhead is significant. The demon wanted to embrace him with his arms, thinking that with his limited arms he could capture the Absolute by material power. He did not know that God is the greatest of the great and the smallest of the small. No one can capture the Supreme Lord or bring him under his control. But the demoniac person always attempts to measure the length and breadth of the Supreme Lord. By his inconceivable potency, the Lord can become the universal form, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, and at the same time he can remain within the box of his devotees as their worshipable deity. Right, so even though he's unlimited, still he can fit in the little puja box that the Brahmin has as a shaligra. At the same time, his universal form, it takes up the whole universe. Like that. You know, and then, so, yeah. So that's the whole point. So there's no question that the demon actually has an ability to deal with this. But they always think they do. So they're always trying to measure the Lord. How great is God? How powerful is God? What does he do? What does he not do? So the intellectuals, that's what they're trying to do. So that's why they never actually get anywhere, because they're dealing with unlimited with their limited brain. Just like he's with his limited arms trying to embrace the unlimited. So it's not going to work. There are many devotees who keep a statue of the Lord in a small box and carry it with them everywhere. Every morning they worship the Lord in the box. Right? There's one Shaligram in the Subramanya temple. He's a Nrisinga Shaligram that was worshipped by, Madhvacharya. I'm not sure where he got it, but he might have even gotten it when he went up to Badri. And so he always stays in a box. And his name, actually, in the local language, means the Lord in the box. Like that. Because he's always in the box. They take him out to do puja, he goes back in the box. His Madhvacharya always had him in that box, because he's traveling. So that's here. The Supreme Lord Keshava, or the Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is not bound by any measure of our calculation. He can remain with his devotee in any suitable form. Yet, he is unapproachable by any amount of demoniac activities. Right? So by the devotee, then any form he can be appreciated in. But for those who are not devotees, then there's no question that they can understand him from any angle. Like that. The demon now began to strike the Lord with his hard fists. But Lord Adhokshija slapped him in the root of the ear, even as Indra, the Lord of the Maruts, hit the demon Vritra. Though struck indifferently by the Lord, the conqueror of all, the demon's body began to wheel. His eyeballs bulged out of their sockets, his arms and legs broken, and the hair on his head scattered. He fell down dead like a gigantic tree uprooted by the wind. Right? So it wasn't like the Lord gave a really hard slap. It's just, you know, and that was it. 25-26. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 26, it does not take even a moment for the Lord to kill any powerful demon, including Hiranyaksha. The Lord could have killed him long before, but he allowed the demon to display the full extent of his magical feats. One may know that by magical feats, by scientific advancement and knowledge, or by material power, one cannot become the equal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then you get all the areas. Because people, when they have material power, they think they're as great as God, or they're great in science, they think they're great as God, or mystic elements, then definitely they think they become at least God, if not greater. You know? So all this is pointing out in the past time that this is not the fact. Because after all that, the Lord just easily killed him. So you can understand, he was just playing this whole time. He was just having fun playing and allowing Hiranyaksha to try all of his tricks. His one signal is sufficient to destroy all our attempts. His inconceivable power, as displayed here, is so strong that the demon, despite all his demoniac maneuvers, was killed by the Lord when the Lord desired, simply by one slap. Verses 27 to 38. Discussion of the glorious death of the demon and the benedictions of the Lord. Brahma praised the fortune of Hiranyaksha for having died at the Lord's hand, and the demigod showered flowers and offered prayers. Maitreya glorifies the process of hearing the Lord's pastimes and the pastimes of the Lord's devotees. He praises the service of the Lord, the loving master. Maitreya then describes the benefit accrued to one who hears the narration of the Lord's killing of Hiranyaksha. Quote, Maitreya Muni continues, Aja, Brahma, and others arrived on the spot to see the fearfully tusked demon lying on the ground, biting his lip.
Right, so he's still upset.
Last moment, he's still, you know, holding on to that. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, Oh, who could meet such blessed death? Brahma continued, He was struck by a forefoot of the Lord, whom yogis, seeking freedom from their unreal material bodies, meditate upon in seclusion in mystic trance. Right, so they're trying to, in their mystic trance, trying to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. Right, but here it's just unasked, then the lotus foot of the Lord comes and hits you up the side of the head. Right, you know, so how glorious, you know, how special, you know.
While gazing on his countenance, this crest jewel of Diti's sons cast off as his mortal coil. 27 and 28. Prabhupada's purport explains the goal of yoga. The process of yoga is very clearly described in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said here that the ultimate end of the yogis and mystics who perform meditation is to get rid of this material body. Right? Because that's the whole point of yoga. So this whole idea is that yoga is just for health. You know, developing the body and everything. It's actually means it maintains the health so that you can have the proper focus and everything to get rid of it. Right? You know, and you get rid of it, you know, not by jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge or something. You get rid of it by elevating yourself to a higher position. Right? So therefore, through yoga, you can elevate yourself to the heavenly planets, to the Brahman, or to the spiritual world. Like that. But that's the whole actual point, is that connection to the Supreme is that you will then connect yourself on that platform, getting rid of this platform.
Therefore, they meditate in secluded places to attain yogic trance. Yoga has to be performed in a secluded place, not in public or in a demonstration on stage, as nowadays practiced by so many so-called yogis. Real yoga aims at ridding one of the material body. Yoga practice is not intended to keep the body fit and young. Such advertisements of so-called yoga are not approved by any standard method. Right? That's just a side thing. That's not the, you know, how you say.
It's just like, let's say, the restaurant, you know, high-class restaurant, and you see on their advertisement, we wash the dishes. And it's kind of like, yes, okay. You know what I'm saying? So that one gets health and all these other things. Of course, that's there, but that's not the real purpose. Right? The point is you can focus, because we're conditioned, we focus nicely when generally we're healthy. So the yoga system does that as a side thing, but it's about meditating on the Lord. Does that make sense? So it's not actually the major point. People make it by taking part of it, then it becomes the Hatha Yoga, or they add Pranayama Raja Yoga, or something like that. But it's not actually about the absorption in the Lord, right? And the connection to the Lord. That's actually what the Astanga Yoga system's for, right? You know, because basically Yama Niyama is kind of left. You know, what you should do, not do, change in lifestyle. Forget that one. You know, like that. You know, so they only take just the asanas and that, and then is that. Yeah, so that's the problem.
When you speak about health, health is connected to goodness.
Health is connected to goodness. That's why it's healthy, because then for some time you're not engaged in passion or ignorance.
Yes.
You're just peacefully there in a peaceful atmosphere doing recommended activities, you know, like that. So that's why it works, because of that element of the mode of goodness. So that's why the devotee, in the practice of yoga, even if they're not performing the asanas in that, and they get that benefit, because they're always active in the Lord's service. So they may or may not have an opportunity for that. If they do, fine. If they don't, it doesn't matter, because the effect of yoga, of ridding oneself of this particular body, going back to Godhead, is obtained. Right? So then they focus the maximum on the spiritual health. Right? Because for the yogi, they're using the elements of karma to get to that point of transcendental. Then on that platform, then they either move forward into devotional service, so then they cultivate that, or they remain on the impersonal platform. But then naturally, then that spiritual health will deteriorate, and one will come back into the material world. So the only thing that actually... because we're talking about health, the real health is the health of the soul. So you have to cultivate that. Now, if at the same time the physical health is maintained, great, because it just means then you can do your service and things nicely. So it's not a problem. It's just that's not the real point of health. It's not because I'm healthy, that's why I'm Krishna conscious. No, it's just useful. You know, just like... I saw one quotation from some nobility back in the 1600s, and you know, he's Italian, and he was talking about, he was a little annoyed about the new fad of foppery, of using forks to eat spaghetti. So he was saying the fingers work perfectly. Why do we need this fork? You know, so these extra things, it's not necessary, right? Yeah. No, you know, it can add to something, but it's not actually, the real point is you have a mouth, you have a hand, and if between the two there's a fork, okay, nice. But the real point is if you just have the fork and you have the spaghetti, nothing happens, right? You know, so when there's the hand and the spaghetti, then something happens, right? Does that make sense?
For children, it's very evident.
Yes, they eat it, and somehow or another, the fork has really not much to do with it.
But, chin involved.
Yeah, well, they have mystic powers; they can absorb nutrients through more than just their mouths. You know, somehow even they get the benefit when it's all over their clothes and the table and their mom, and you know, it's like that. Somehow or another, they have greater abilities.
I think also potentially in the Yoga Sutras he mentions that the yoga is about mind control, it's not about the body.
Yes. But these things are mentioned early, and then because people are progressing, they forget all that. So when you get to the last chapter of Patanjali, it's not talking about the super soul, because it's already understood that that's what you should be doing. But then because they're not devotees, when they get to the end, they don't worry about it. You know, so that's the thing. But for those who actually understand yoga, then that's mentioned in the beginning, because that's the most important. And then at the end, that's just more details of the technique. Right? But they take it that these last, that's the most important. So it's what to do.
Particularly mentioned in this verse is the word yam, or unto whom. indicating that meditation should be targeted on the personality of Godhead. Even if one concentrates his mind on the boar form of the Lord, that is also yoga. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, one who concentrates his mind constantly in meditation upon the personality of Godhead is in one of his many varieties of forms, is the first-class yogi, and he can very easily attain trance simply by meditating on the form of the Lord. One is able to continue such meditation on the Lord's form at the time of one's death. One is liberated from this mortal body and is transferred to the kingdom of God. This opportunity was given to the demon by the Lord, and therefore Brahma and other demigods were astonished.
Right. So what the yogis are trying so hard to do, just see the Lord, meditate on the Lord. Now here he was very much meditating on the Lord, you know, for this whole quarter of the day. Right. So then he's, you know, like this, and then at the time of death he's meditating on the Lord. So what the yogis, with great difficulty, are doing, he's achieving very easily just by, you know, fighting with the Lord. So it's very, Brahma is very amazed, because we have to remember is that Brahma's planet is where all the yogis go. Because that's who he has on his planet. So he has all the best yogis in the universe. And so he can understand now this is very, very fortunate, right?
In other words, the perfection of yoga practice can be attained by a demon also if he is simply kicked by the Lord.
Right. Yes, you don't see any yoga studios advertising that. What's the specialty of your studio? Well, we're training you up to be kicked by the Lord.
Brahma continued, these two personal assistants of the Supreme Lord, having been cursed, have been destined to take birth in demoniac families. After a few such births, they will return to their own positions. The demigods addressed the Lord, all obeisances unto you. You are the enjoyer of all sacrifices, and you have assumed the form of a boar in pure goodness for the purpose of maintaining the world. Fortunately for us, this demon, who is a torment to the worlds, has been slain by you, and we too, O Lord, are now at ease in devotion to your lotus feet. Right?
So when it's in turmoil, they're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and now when things are peaceful, then now they're absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So that's the beauty of it. It doesn't matter what it is, Krishna consciousness is enhanced. Right? So if it's nice, then the situation is good. You can think of Krishna. If it's not nice, then you can naturally think of Krishna. Right? So.
Sri Maitreya continued, after thus killing the most formidable demon, Hiranyaksha, the Supreme Lord Hari, the origin of the boar species, returned to his own abode, where there is always an uninterrupted festival. The Lord was praised by the demigods headed by Brahma. 29-31. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 31 describes the complete happiness of Vaikuntha. Especially mentioned in this verse is the word akanditotsava. Utsava means pleasure. Whenever some function takes place to express happiness, it is called utsava. Utsava, the expression of complete happiness, is also present in the Vaikuntha lokas, the abode of the Lord, who is worshipable even by the demigods like Brahma, to say nothing of other less important entities such as human beings. Right? So there's an expression of happy, of complete happiness. So in Vaikuntha, they're always completely happy because of their absorption in the Lord. So that means everything that goes on is actually a festival. Right? Because they're always expressing this, so it'll always come out in some very special, wonderful way. Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, I have explained to you the personality of Godhead's coming down as the first boar incarnation and killing in a great fight a demon of unprecedented prowess, as if he were just a plaything. This has been narrated by me as I heard it from my predecessor spiritual masters. 32. Sudha Goswami concluded his narration by saying, my dear Brahmana, Kshata, Vidura, the greatest devotee of the Lord, achieved transcendental bliss by hearing... Oh, yeah, no, my dear Brahmana, Akshata Vidura, the great devotee of the Lord, achieved transcendental bliss by hearing the narration of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from the authoritative source of the sage Kausharava, Maitreya, and he was very pleased.
Because right, Suta Goswami is then speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya about the discussion between Vidura and Maitreya. So you always have these. And now and again, then Pariket and Sukadeva will come in. Now and again, Vyasadeva will come in. So these are all the narrations taking place.
What to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose chest is marked with Srivatsa? People may take transcendental pleasure even in hearing the words and deeds of the devotees, whose fame is immortal.
Because it's connected with the Lord, so therefore it goes on. We see the devotees are being discussed. You know, we're discussing the pastimes of Brahma, and his pastimes in creation go back to the beginning of creation. So because of the connection with the Lord, they're just as eternal as the Lord's pastimes. Because the Lord also only performs pastimes with devotees, so the two go together.
The personality of Godhead delivered the king of elephants, who was attacked by an alligator, and who meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, the female elephants who accompanied him were crying, and the Lord saved them from the impending danger. What grateful soul is there who would not render his loving service to such a great master as the personality of Godhead? The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection, though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate him. So the great devotees, they'll naturally surrender and everything. But here's the... What is it called? The unrighteous. Then they have a problem then approaching the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord like that. So that's the thing. Is as that piety and devotional service increases, then these kind of things become easier. And just, but where it's difficult, that's where the impious aspects are still left. As they're purified by the process, then it all becomes easy and natural. So that's what Prabhupada's mentioning. This is a natural process. It's not an artificial process. So that's why you don't have to have another system for protection than the Lord. It's not that I'll do all these other things that'll protect, and I'm praying to the Lord that those all work. No, it's...
Blessings.
You know, you always hear about it in medieval novels and stuff like that. So must be something important, right? Now you can say, yes, I've experienced this. Yes.
We have to be patient if we don't have taste for some specific aspect of devotional process.
Yes. Just naturally with time, it will come. Yes. If there's an interest, then that will come. Does that make sense? And even areas that are natural to us that we may not be interested in, those will also work. Right? So we may be aware of something that's interesting, but there may be other things that we're not necessarily interested in.
Can we say that this story about Hiranyaksha and the Lord is like teaching us to fight against our demoniac mentality?
Is it teaching us to fight against a demoniac mentality? Well, it's more about the absorption of the Lord, connection to the Lord. Because here, Hiranyaksha, it's not so much, his benefit is because of his meditation on the Lord. Even though it's an anger, but still he's absorbed in the Lord. Right? And consistently. So one could ask, so I could be angry with the Lord, but can you do that consistently? So since we can't, therefore then the process of sadhana bhakti is given, where one, through the whole day, can be absorbed in the Lord. Right? Because the pure devotion means it's favorable. So just meditating on the Lord
then he gets liberation. Mm-hmm. Right? So what the great yogis are trying to get, then he gets just by meditating on the Lord in anger. Right? We know he's a pure devotee, but the example being given is just anger. That's why he only is liberated from that situation. But then they come back again. Right? But so the yogi is trying to do that, get out of the material world, but it's only by meditation on the Lord that then you really get the benefit. So here, all the benefit gained by these yogis who work so hard was gained by a demon just by remembering the Lord. So now if you add that remembrance is favorable, then so much more benefit. Yeah, so it'll be more on that positive side. Right, the negative side is also going to be brought up, but we'll start seeing from now on it'll be more on the positive side, on that absorption, that attraction, that like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
O Brahmanas, anyone who hears, chants, or takes pleasure in the wonderful narration of the killing of Hiranyaksha, demon, by the Lord, who appeared as the first boar in order to deliver the world, is at once relieved of the results of sinful activities, even the killing of a brahmana. Because all this pastime is all connected with that they insulted a brahmana. Right? So just hearing these pastimes, so it'll even get rid of the killing of the brahmana.
That's just a specific. But in any case, anything connected to the Lord will get rid of all sin. So why it mentions this, because it's the heaviest, it's the worst.
This most sacred narrative confers extraordinary merit, wealth, fame, longevity, and all the objects of one's desire. On the field of battle, it promotes the strength of one's vital organs and organs of action. One who listens to it at the last moment of his life is transferred to the supreme abode of the Lord, O dear Shonaka. 33-38. The qualification of the hearer and speaker in order to achieve transcendental bliss is explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to verse 33. If anyone wants to derive transcendental pleasure by hearing the pastimes of the Lord, he must hear from the authoritative source, as explained here. Right?
So if it's heard from the authoritative source, it has that chit potency. Then you see there's effect. Otherwise, so many people are not connected to that chit potency describing about the Lord's pastime. So it's pious. They'll get material benefit from it. But the transcendental benefit they'll only get if it's connected. Does that make sense? It's just like you get the benefit of a very nice lamp sitting on your table, even though it's not plugged in. But you'll only get that. But if you want to actually get illumination, it has to be plugged in. Right?
Maitreya heard the narration from his bona fide spiritual master, and Vidura also heard from Maitreya. One becomes an authority simply by presenting whatever he has heard from his spiritual master, and one who does not accept a bona fide spiritual master cannot become an authority.
Right? Because just the idea, I will read the books on my own, I won't hear from anybody, I won't accept anybody as directive or authority, then one actually is not connected. Because you have that all over the place. You know, people get some book, they read it, and now they become the big authority. Like that. Or not even reading it. They're just sitting out in the field somewhere, and they come up with, so they have an epiphany. You know, and suddenly the next thing you know is, you know, you have a nice computer or something. You know, so that's the whole thing, is it only will generate material. Though it's coming from, knowledge, that effort in that knowledge, or maybe some element of goodness to it, because of following that process there's some more understanding, but it still won't give you transcendental knowledge. That has to come from authority. Right? So we see is that Prabhupada's worked it in, is that we just regularly hear, you know, from devotees. So we're always hearing from authority. So just that in itself then makes it that what we hear we can give to others, and it has effect. Does that make sense? So even the person who's just been in contact with the devotees one day, they've accepted them as authority in the spiritual life, then they, later in the day, can say the same things to someone else, and that person takes it seriously and develops faith. Right? So that's the whole. That's where the potency lies, is because of acceptance of the that it comes from the Lord, it's about the Lord, it's coming in the parampara. Then that gives that potency. And so then that is what's working.
This is clearly explained here. One wants to have transcendental pleasure. He must find a person with authority. It is also stated in the Bhagavatam that simply by hearing from an authoritative source, with the ear and the heart, one can relish the pastimes of the Lord. Otherwise, it is not possible.
And so that's what's so important, like with Prabhupada's books, because there's the purports. So you're actually hearing from authorized source. You're reading the Gita, but you're actually hearing it from the parampara. You're not just hearing the Gita directly. So somebody will just read the Gita directly, but they won't really get much. It's from the purports that it actually makes the difference. Right? Yes.
And what is the meaning of clear with the heart?
To hear with the heart means that you have faith. That you or you appreciate or you're open that yes, this is the truth, or right? So in other words, if you're doubtful about it, then the effect will have less. But even if one's doubtful, if one continues hearing, it will purify, if you're hearing from a bona fide source, until that the heart will be able to hear.
Yes.
Right? Is that... Yeah.
Yes. There's also an element of the rapt attention there.
Rapt attention? Yes. Yeah, that's the focus in that. But that can also just be from piety. That it's, you know, this is what you do, someone's speaking, you sit and listen. But it's that you want to hear. Then that's naturally what comes. Because by hearing regularly, you get purified. And at some point, then you want to hear.
Yes.
Like that. It becomes an interest that it's important to you. So that's when it becomes more dynamic. You're going just because, okay, you know, it's time to go to class, you know, and I'm dutiful, I follow the sadhana. So you go to class. You're going to get benefit, definitely. But you'll get more is because you like to go to class. You know, you like to go to Mangalarti. You like to go to the Guru Puja. You like to chant your japa. But even if you do it just because you're supposed to, you still get benefit. So that's the beauty, is the mixed devotional service still works. Because if it didn't work, why would we be talking about it? Why would the whole process of sadhana be here? You know, then you'd have to just wait, you know, for, you know, who knows how long, that one soul in the whole universe might be able to, you know, follow what Krishna recommends, just surrender immediately. You know, but because all the other things of, you know, following sadhana bhakti and all these would be, you know, not options. Yeah. Yes.
So the real presence in Maharaj is in the authority and the acceptance.
Yes. So that's the meaning here, qualification of the hearer and the speaker. That is coming in parampara, they have faith in it, and the person hearing then has that acceptance and faith. Then that will be dynamic. Then you get the results like they're talking about here. Otherwise, there'll be some effect, you know, but it's not necessarily that, you know, say, you know, you might find a penny on the sidewalk or something. You know, it's not necessarily that you come back, look at your bank balance, and it's gone up a few zeros. You know, stuff like that. You know, that's so there's always effect like that if it's coming in the bona fide line. But it's just a matter of how qualified is the speaker, how qualified is the listener, then it generates more. Is that? Yeah.
Sanatana Goswami there has especially warned that one should not hear anything about the personality of Godhead from the lips of a non-devotee. Right?
They may talk about God, the Supreme, the omnipotent, omniscient, the Creator, the Judge, you know, like this. But they're not talking about the personality of Godhead. So that kind of discussion you can have. But if you're going to discuss about actually the person, then it should be someone who's more qualified. Right? So if you see that that's not going to happen, you just keep it on this other level, just talking about God. And then that works very nicely. But if you're not talking about, but if you bring out the personality and all that, then it can get a little touchy. Then don't go there, yes.
So this would be connected to the mind's offense, then don't preach to the faith.
Yes, don't preach to the faith.
It's not that we don't discuss, but not the personal aspect.
Yes, not the personal. So that would be the thing, is that you can always bring up that, because you can always talk about the Supreme. Very few are touchy about God. Right? Like that. But many then can handle God, but can't handle actually he's a person. You know what I'm saying? You know, a burning bush is you're pushing the envelope here, you know? You know, and then he saw, who was it? That was Moses, right?
Yeah,
he saw the Lord face to face, which means he saw the lower back, because, you know, his face is too terrible to behold, right? You know? Yeah, so whatever. Like that. So you don't get that. You don't get into that. If someone's interested, then you discuss it, because that's the most attractive feature. That's the natural feature. But otherwise, you can discuss God, and that's not a problem. I think I was in Dubai, the airport, was sitting in some place, he looked like, you know, someone in his 20s, educated, you know, as, you know, well-situated, Muslim, you know, dressed, fully Muslim dress. And he came up and asked if he could sit. You know, he was a gentleman, and he asked, okay, what's your philosophy? Because he figured, you know, we wear bed sheets, we have a philosophy, you wear bed sheets, you must have a philosophy, right? You know? Hey, yeah, you know, come on. So he asked, and because the main principle that they're worried about is the monotheistic. So I said, there's only one God, right? You know, that's half of what they say, you know. And so, the examples of that, you know, there's only one son, you know, it has different languages, but like this and that, and, you know, got on like that. And so it's about developing our relationship with the Lord, you know, serving him in affection. So we do that through like this, like that. And he was very happy. But we didn't say about, you know, developing love for God and serving him eternally in his pastimes. You don't get into that. They just want to know that, you know, okay, God's God, right? Not somebody else's God. You know, it's like, you know, I didn't mention Eric Clapton or anybody like that. You know, so he was quite happy. Like that, you know. You know, so that's... let it work. So at least for them, start off with that line, right? You don't have to say there's only one God and God is all that. You just say, you know, there's only one God. And they're cool about that. Yes?
One time I was trying to do some books in Australia, and there was a picture of Krishna or something, and they asked about it. It was a very brief encounter. And I just said, yeah, God is blue, he plays a flute, and they just kept walking.
Yeah. No, then you just say it's an Indian, you know, how you say, painting, an ancient picture of Krishna, who's worshipped like this. You don't have to get into that. Then they just think it is something like that. Like, they'll go to a museum and look at all these things, you know, and they're fine, you know. Because with them, it's just a matter of catching them on the Supreme and things like that. You get too much into that, then they don't necessarily like it.
They thought I was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Takes one to know one, right? No? That's what my mom always said.
It's just interesting because Dhananda Swami, he developed in New York, he developed the whole seminar, and the name of the seminar, Why God Can Be Blue. And then he gives all the points, and then he brings people, new people, to the conclusion why, you know, starting from basic, and then why God can be blue, and why it is Krishna.
Okay, nice.
And it works.
Yeah, yeah. But if you take it through the logical, it's probably, because Prabhupada recommends that logical presentation, because they don't believe in Shastra or like that, so it has to logically make sense, and if it does, then, yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay. Non-devotees are considered to be like serpents, as milk is poisoned by a serpent's touch. So, although the narration of the pastimes of the Lord is as pure as milk, when administered by serpent-like devotees, it becomes poisonous.
not only does it have no effect in transcendental pleasure, but it is dangerous also. That sometimes is, oh, but they're, you know, they're doing this or that, or, you know, it's also, oh, it's also ether, it's also Bhagavatam. No, but it is, yes. But the problem is it's being touched by the lips of a serpent. So the pure milk gives a poisonous effect. It's not that the milk's not pure, it's just that you'll get a poisonous effect from it. Like that. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is warned that no description of the pastimes of the Lord should be heard from the Mayavad or impersonalist school. He has clearly said, Mayavadi bhashya shunile hoy sarva nash. If anyone hears the Mayavadi's interpretation of the pastimes of the Lord, or their interpretation of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or any other Vedic literature, then he is doomed. Once one is associated with impersonalists, he can never understand the personal feature of the Lord and his transcendental pastimes. Because that's the whole thing, is their discussion of the pastimes is only to attract people to the concept of the goodness. And then in the mode of goodness, then you renounce all these things and come to the idea platform of impersonalism. So they just see it as a tool for the common mass of people who aren't that intelligent. So they need to be, relate to higher concepts through the mode of goodness, like that. But actually, the real intelligent people don't need this and that. You know, because say what you like, is why are they doing this? Because the point is it's about those who are serious. So previously, they would just sit in their places and discuss Vedanta. But nowadays, is that they're not satisfied with just having a couple of people sitting around. They want the big, you know, stadium full of people. So then now they take this up. So it's not actually about their Brahman. It's actually about their name and fame. So that's the sad part. So, you know, not only is it materialistic on this side, but it ruins then so many more people's chances at devotional service. Then we have another. Oh, here, part four. Okay. Okay, so what do we have here? So this is Kardama and Devahuti, chapters 20 to 24. So chapter 20, conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. 21, conversation between Manu and Kardama. 22, marriage of Kardama, Muni, and Devahuti. 23, Devahuti's lamentation. 24, the renunciation of Kardama Muni. Chapter 20, conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. Pratigya. It is recommended in this verse that one find a person who knows the science of God, or a tattvavit. Verse 4, purport. Chapter 20 summarizes questions and answers. Questions 70 and 71 of Srimad Bhagavatam are asked by Shonaka Rishi of Suta Goswami. Question 70. After the earth was again situated in its orbit, what did Swayambhuva Manu do to show the path of liberation to persons who were to take birth later on? 1. The answer to this question is the subject matter of the next two chapters, 21 and 22, where the activities of Swayambhuva Manu are described. Chapter 20 sets the stage by narrating Brahma's creation of the Manus, because he wanted to know what's happening in the next stage of the creation. Because now the Prajapatis are there, and that, but what do the Manus do? So then the Manu to do his work, then he needs mankind. Mankind lives on earth. Earth is submerged in the water. Earth needs to come out of the water. Varaha lifts it out of the water. Demon says, hey, that's my earth, you know. And so then they have that fight and everything. But now that the demon's killed, now we can go on. Right? Question 71. In the talks between Vidura and Maitreya, there must have been some narrations of the spotless pastimes of the Lord. The hearing of such narrations is exactly like bathing in the water of the Ganges, for it can free one from all sinful reactions. 5. Please narrate the activities of the Lord, which are all magnanimous and worth glorifying. So that's in verse 6, yes. This question is about the topics of the Lord and his incarnations. It was asked previously as two questions. Question 51. Please narrate the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in his different incarnations for the welfare of the twice born, the cows, and the demigods. Verse 7. And question 53. I have repeatedly heard about these higher and lower statuses of human society from the mouth of Vyasadeva. A rhetorical question that Sutta asks in chapter 20, verse 6. What sort of devotee can be satiated by hearing the nectarine pastimes of the Lord? Does not come under study. Question 72 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by Vidura of Maitreya Muni. Tell me, after he evolved the Prajapatis, what did Brahma do to create living beings? Under Brahma's instructions, how did Prajapatis like Marichi and Swayambhuvamanu create? How did the universe then evolve? In creating with their wives, did each Prajapati act independently, or did all of them create together under a single plan of action? 9-11. Maitreya's brief reply in chapter 20, in verses 6-53 of this chapter, Maitreya Muni briefly responds to question 72. The question relates to the next one that Vidura asks in chapter 21, question 73. The full topic of the Prajapatis and their descendants extends beyond this canto. Right, because if you're going to get into the Manus, because that will go beyond this canto, because the Manus will keep coming up. But in dealing with the Manu, there'll be something that goes back to a Prajapati, that'll, you know, or maybe go down to a king. Right, you know, or we'll refer back to the primary, the secondary creation. So you see in the Puranic history, because those are the topics, then they'll all be connected to each other, and then therefore all come mixed together. So you have one section that may be predominantly one thing, but then it'll turn into the other things come up because it needs support. Why is the king doing this? And then that goes back to because of something else. Or does that make sense? Yeah. Previous questions discussed in this chapter, question 52 and 58. Question 52. Please also describe how Narayana, the creator of the universe, and the self-sufficient Lord, has differently created the natures, activities, forms, features, and names of the different living creatures. Because that was from the primary creation. Because all the nature of all the living entities is already generated. Then it's a matter of Brahma manifesting them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Question 58. Please narrate the events of creation after the Virat Rupa stage, 23-37. So, again, that's, you know, since that was the primary stage, so now the secondary, Brahma's creation, we're just continuing Brahma's creation. And then in Brahma's creation, the secondary, then it includes the details of the Manus, the Prajapatis, and the great kings. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, everything can come into this, basically. Yeah. Adhyaya Prakashika. The secondary creation previously described in detail is again partially repeated with details added in the 20th chapter in order to relate the lineage stemming from Swayambhuvamanu at the end of the chapter. So there's some more detail. So it's always, you know, there's unlimited detail, but, you know, how much is necessary for the description that will be described, right? Shaunaka Rishi inquires about Vidura's further questions to Maitreya, but Sutta first describes Maitreya's delight at hearing how Varaha killed Hiranyaksha. Sutta then repeats Vidura's questions to Maitreya, in which Vidura inquires about the evolution of the universal population through Brahma's sons, the Prajapatis. Maitreya again explains the universal creation, beginning with the Mahat Tattva, the false ego, the production of the shining egg-like universes, lying lifelessly on the causal ocean. The Lord's entrance is Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Brahma's appearance on the lotus growing from the Lord's navel, and the Lord's empowerment of Brahma. Excuse me. Brahma first creates ignorance, then rakshasas, night, the demigods, day, and from his buttocks, the demons. Afraid of the demons, Brahma approaches the Lord, who tells him to give up the body that created them. That body becomes twilight. The demons take twilight as a beautiful woman and quickly possess her. Brahma then involves the apsaras and gandharvas, ghosts and the invisible sadhyas, petris and kinaras and snakes. He then creates the manus who will promote welfare activities in the universe and with whom he endows his own form. The demigods applaud Brahma's creation of the manus because by that creation they will achieve the results of the ritualistic acts the manus will arrange for. Brahma next evolves the great sages as his sons and gives each a part of his body. So
negative first. Like Narak, then the Rakshasas, the ignorance. Because that's how material should be.
Let's say you want to prepare a potato. Which do you deal with first? Yeah, so the negative is always, you remove the negative, then the positive is available. But with the Lord, that's the thing, because it's transcendental, you can deal with the positive first, and it automatically gets rid of the negative. Right? So, yeah. But in the material world, that's why it's you have that element, things that you should avoid, because if you avoid those, then the things that you should do then work easily. So, yes.
So then, just out of habit, sometimes we put more emphasis on the negative.
Yes, because that means if you want to get something done, you have to remove the obstacle. So much of the time, our organization is about how to see that no obstacles come up. But it's actually about how to accomplish what you're doing. So the focus should be mainly on that, primarily on that, and secondarily on seeing that no obstacles. But we get so absorbed in the obstacles that it becomes primary. We get the work done, but we don't get the full benefit because we are not actually understanding what's primary.
But we forget about primary.
Yeah, we even forget about it. You know, like the man, he's worked very hard. He got through the day somehow or another. He's gotten, you know, the money and that. And he comes home and just thinks, okay, now is my, you know, me time. But then the whole point of removing all those obstacles so he'd have the facilities for family time. You know, so like you said, they just forget the primary and take the secondary as the all in all and then can't understand why everyone's bothering them. You know, why does the kid want to come and, you know, play ball or something? And why is the wife asking about the cauliflowers? You know, things like that. Yeah. Okay, so then, thank you. Or we can just Shloka Anusharanam. Summary verses 1 through 6, further questions, 7 through 53, the creation continues. So we get into more detail of the creation.